My guest this week is David Grace. David is a college basketball coach who most recently coached at Vanderbilt. He has made stops at several Division I programs like San Francisco, Oregon State, and UCLA. He is regarded as one of the best recruiters in college basketball. David and I talk about his journey from the Air Force to coaching at some of the best programs in America. We talk about what he looks for in recruits and much, much more. David is a principled, disciplined guy. He has an elite work ethic and just an awesome guy. You're going to really enjoy part one with my conversation with David. So without further ado, David Grace.
David, awesome to have you on the podcast. Really excited to interview you. And yeah, thanks for taking time. Why don't you walk us on your journey from high school to present day?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Travis. It really means a lot. You know, I went to three different high schools in three different states due to my stepfather being in the Army. And we didn't have AAU back then. So it was difficult to get a Division I scholarship. I graduated from Leesville High School in Louisiana. I also went to Bradwell Institute in Hinesville, Georgia, and Aberdeen High School in Aberdeen, Maryland, where I'm originally from. And I call that my home. So so then I didn't have a basketball scholarship. I thought I was good enough for Division I, and I was going to walk on at Northwestern State in Natchitoches, Louisiana. And the assistant coach took some interest in me. And so at the dinner table one time, my mom, you know, we ate dinner at the dinner table back then. And my mom asked me what I was going to do. And I told her I wanted to walk on at Northwestern State. And she said, well, with what money, you know, and who's going to pay for it? I said, you do. You pay for everything else. And I didn't know about grant and aids. We didn't have cell phones back then. We didn't have the internet. And so I kind of felt bad. So 2 days later, I told her I'd join the Army. I mean, join the military, because she suggested I join the Army. And I told her I didn't want to join the Army because I saw what my stepfather did. And I said, I'll join the Air Force. And then she used reverse psychology on me. She said, oh, you're not smart enough to join the Air Force. And so I wanted to prove her wrong. I did. And obviously, I got in. I did 20 years in the United States Air Force. I'm very proud of that. Very thankful, learned so much about leadership and followership. And I think that's, I think, you know, the people, if you haven't been in the military or, you know, you're just looking on the outside, the Air Force is, to me, is the greatest of what they do. And they're continuously improving the process with checklists and you know, your leadership, you're going to always go into leadership schools and so they teach you so much about leadership. So I learned so much. I learned how to be a coach in the Air Force, of coaching, you know, my people that I supervised and getting, you know, through the day with the task that we had at hand. So the Air Force molded me. It taught me how to get along with people from different worlds, from different countries, different part of the United States. You know, I was a human relations specialist my last 6 years. I went to a school called Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, one of the greatest human relations schools there is. It's in Cocoa Beach, Florida, Patrick Air Force Base. Just a great school, 15 week in residence. I got 23 college credits. So that's how intense it was. But from there, you know, while I was in the Air Force, I started coaching with Boo Williams AAU program in Hampton, Virginia, his 12 year olds. And Boo taught me so much. Really love Boo to this day. He's a legend. He's in the NBA or Basketball Hall of Fame. Just a super person. And then I got promoted, and I had to get an assignment. Well, I got an assignment to Phoenix, Arizona, and that's how I got out west. And then I started coaching AAU here in Phoenix, and got on with the Arizona Magic, and we kind of formed the Arizona Magic from the Compton Magic out of Los Angeles. And I was just talking to Atope last night through text. One of the best AU programs on the West Coast, one of the best AU coaches ever. There's been a documentary about the program and stuff. So I started coaching with them. And then I retired from the Air Force and took a high school job. We had great success with our AAU team. You know, most of our kids went Division I, some went high major. We've had two NBA players come out of the Arizona Magic program and many more in the Compton Magic program. But from there, I became a high school coach. I was assistant coach while I was in the Air Force at Trevor Brown High School for 2 years. And then, for 4 years. And then when I retired, I became a head high school coach. Really proud of what we did there. We took over a bad program. They were 4-17. And 2 years later, we go 29-4 and win a state title. Hmm. And then from there, I got my break to go coach at Sacramento State. I took a $20,000 pay cut, slept on the floor in the locker room to reach my dream of being Division I assistant coach. Spent a year at Sacramento State, was able to recruit Vinnie McGee, freshman player of the year in that league and in the Big Sky League. I moved up to University of San Francisco, spent a year there. That's when Eddie Sutton came along halfway through, so I got to see the other side of the business. And then I got another break. I spent 5 years at Oregon State working for Michelle Obama's brother, Craig Robinson. And that was a great 5 years. I learned a lot from Craig. And, you know, we got to go hang out at the White House with Barack Obama and Michelle. So that was a great experience. And we won a lot of games there. I was able to recruit a couple NBA guys and some a Pac-12 scoring champion in Roberto Nelson. Jared Cunningham went 24th in the first round, and Eric Moreland won a world championship with the Toronto Raptors. And from there, I got another break. I spent 5 years at UCLA with Steve Alford and recruited a host of NBA players there. We had a great run. We went over 117 games, went to 3 Sweet 16s, and it was just a special time for me to be able to say I coached at UCLA, and it was quite an honor, and I'm very thankful. Then 1 year at Cal Berkeley, and Joaquin Jones got let go that year I was there. He was only there 2 years. He got a new AD, and he wanted to make a change right away. Then 1 year as the associate head coach at Vanderbilt University under Jerry Stackhouse. And then we came back home to take care of my mother-in-law, who had dementia, and she just passed recently. And now I'm a free agent, looking for a gig now here in Phoenix. So I'm running some camps here. We just had a middle school, highly successful middle school camp, and I'll be doing more of that as we go. I'll probably start my academy as well and work kids out. And then see what happens in the future. See what God has for me.
Love it, love it. Thanks for you were one of the longer journeys that I've had as far as writing down all your stops. So
I try to be kind of quick with it, but
yeah, no, you're great. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. I want to you mentioned Craig Robinson and met a lot learned a lot from him at Oregon State in your time there. Maybe talk a little bit about Craig. What makes him such a great leader?
Well, Craig, you know, graduated from Princeton, and he went into the financial business and had great success on Wall Street. Then he wanted to be a coach. So he kind of put all of that aside. He had great success, and he just wanted to be a coach, and he started coaching at Northwestern in Chicago. And then he became the head coach at Brown University. So he has a different thought process. He's a very bright guy. He goes about things a little different. And I learned from that, because I'm always trying to learn and trying to better myself and looking at the different leadership styles. And his was a little different.
Explain, give me a picture of what.
Well, it's kind of hard to explain, because we went right to 5 a.m. practices. Some of the things that he demanded from the players in different aspects were very, very successful. And, we did a great job with the academic side of the house, because he was really big on that. He was very much, he loved this talk about, you know, I can't trust you. I got to be able to trust you. And to tell a young kid that, you know, is a leadership style of, do I trust you off the court? Can I trust you on the court? And he would always make, you know, those statements to young kids, and just how he coached, it was just different. And it's kind of hard to explain. He ran the Princeton offense. I didn't know the Princeton offense. And with the Princeton offense, you have to be very disciplined, and you have to read and react, and you have to understand the concepts, the different, you know, he loved the Princeton offense, boy. We talk about it all the time, and I got to learn it. And, you know, I think it's a great offense for when you don't have enough talent. And obviously he used it at Brown because he wasn't going to get the five-star recruits. Right. And Princeton, you know, the guy that invented it wasn't getting the five-star recruits. So those things, and to understand how that worked, was really valuable to me.
Yeah. So did he play under Pete Newell? Like, how did he?
Yeah, Pete Carril. Yeah.
Pete Carril. Yeah.
Yeah, he played under Pete Carril. So he had some of the old school stuff, you know, like we didn't watch a lot of film because we were going to play zone, and you know, we watched some, but we didn't watch a lot. Not like when I was at UCLA. I mean, Steve Alford, you know, we're watching film at 1 o'clock in the morning, especially on the road, you know, so it's a whole different concept on how to do things. Both very successful,
yeah.
You know, so it's no one right or wrong reason, but he didn't watch a lot of film. Pete Carril didn't either. Mm-hmm. But then I used to joke with him all the time. I said, you guys didn't have film back then, coach. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But, and you know, Craig is obviously, he's the guy who runs the NABC now. So he's doing great work there as well. And he's making some great changes for us coaches. And he's the perfect guy for that job. And because of his leadership skills.
Yeah, love it. Okay, you mentioned Steve Alford. Maybe visit a little bit or share a little bit what has allowed him to have success.
You know, he played for Bobby Knight, who was an outstanding X's and O's guy, very demanding. You know, his style his style wouldn't fit today.
Right.
You know, he was harsh in a lot of ways. And but Coach Alford, you know, I call him Steve, obviously, but he learned a lot from Coach Knight. Tells stories all the time about him. You know, the will to win, you know, was instilled in, you know, the will to prepare to win is has been instilled in Steve. Steve was almost to the point of paranoia of making sure that everything was covered. You know, we would watch film, especially on the road. We'd get to the hotel, and sometimes I'd go out recruiting and come back, and it'd be 12 o'clock at night, and we're still in the film room the night before the game watching film. We could be talking about a pick and roll that he saw 2 years ago, you know, against that team, and we would bring it up, and how are we going to guard that, you know, or how another team guarded it, you know. So his will to prepare for the games has been unmatched, and the willingness to watch film and to better himself. He was always trying to learn and get better. That's why he's still coaching today. And I learned a lot in those ways from him.
Yeah. And then your last stop was at Vandy, most recent stop, Jerry Stackhouse. I know you were only there with him for 1 year. And was that his first year at Vandy as well?
Yes. And it was
so he's transitioning from the NBA to college. Yeah.
That was a huge learning curve. You know, it was a learning curve for him, and it's a learning curve for me to, you know, try to get him used to the college way of doing things. You know, he had great mentors in the NBA. He obviously had a great NBA career, one of the best players to play in the NBA. I learned a lot about how they do things in the NBA. When he first got there, he wanted to bring the NBA model to the college scene because that's all he knew. You know, he didn't, you know, he was so far removed from playing with Dean Smith. Even though we took some of Dean Smith's things that he did, he wanted, you know, that's why we had 14 people on staff, you know, because the NBA has big staffs. Mm-hmm. You know, getting him used to being having to recruit, you know, that was a learning curve and just so many things there. I learned so much. We ran almost 200 plays. I learned every which way to run an offense, you know, because of the NBA. That's what the NBA does. You know, they have a ton of plays. They don't have nothing else to do. You know what I mean? They're just playing games. You know, we have recruiting, we got academics, we got boosters, we got everything else. So it's a little bit more to it. So, but I learned a lot from Coach Stackhouse, a lot on the court. He really knows his X's and O's. He knows defensive strategies and stuff like that. So I learned a lot from him as well.
Yeah. Okay. So where you're at right now, you're not on a staff. So you probably have a little bit of a different perspective. I'd be curious as you, look over the landscape of college basketball, and maybe it's just in the West Coast, but I'm guessing you're pretty well versed in the whole country. What is there a coach or two that you look at from where you're at right now thinking, man, I would love to learn from that guy, or I've heard great things. They do a great job. This guy's a next level type leader or next level type coach. Is there anybody in the basketball landscape that you don't really know, but you are intrigued by?
Well, you know, I spent 14 years in Division I. I got to coach against a lot, and some of them I did their scouts against them. So I know some of their concepts because we had to prepare to play against them. You know, I almost worked for Lon Kruger, and he just retired from Oklahoma, yep. And his son's over at UNLV. Lon interviewed me at the Final Four, and he was waiting on one of his assistants to see if he was going to get a head coaching job. And I couldn't wait. And that's when Stackhouse asked me to come to Vanderbilt. But Lon Kruger, who just retired, is a guy that I'm trying to go meet him and pick his brain and learn from him. Dana Altman, who I think is one of the best in the business at Oregon. There's a, you know, obviously Coach Krzyzewski, they've been doing it for so long. Right. And you know, Larry Brown, I almost got to work with him a couple times. Obviously, he's at University of Memphis with Penny right now, and I would love to be there just to listen to him talk and about the X's and O's, because he's one of the best. He's one at every level. He's one of the best X's and O's guys to do it. Bill Self, obviously, he's had great success. There's many, many guys that I would love to just sit in a room and listen to and talk to. I got a lot of great, great friends that I stay in touch with. Mick Cronin is a different type of the way he runs things and different type of leadership. And, you know, always want to go over and learn what he's doing. Obviously, he took my recruits, I would like to say. I'm just playing. The ones that I recruited there, he took them to the Final Four. So a lot of them, not all of them, but he's one that I would always want to sit down with. I got so many friends in the business. If I don't say their name, I'll get ribbed later on down the road. So I'm probably missing some guys, but everybody does it a little different, you know, and has a little bit of different leadership styles and the way they go, you know, a few up at Gonzaga, you know, mm-hmm. he's had a great run so far. There, I would love to see how, especially him being at a mid-major league, and see how he's done what he's done over the years to take it to where it's at now with the number one team in the country right now. He's got it rolling.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, before I dive into some characteristics of recruiting coordinators and really elite recruiters, I want to ask this question. I was reading an article probably 2 weeks ago, and it was just talking about, it was actually a college football article, but it was talking about head coaches that recruit. Mm-hmm. Who is the best? Obviously, the assistants are doing a lion's share of the recruiting. You guys are busting it, but the head coach has to be involved in recruiting. Who is the best head coach you've either worked for as far as recruiting and just his intensity and his intentionality in it? Or maybe somebody that you didn't even work for, you've just seen or heard that they're really elite, they're really engaged with the recruiting side. Who's some of the better ones from a head coaching standpoint?
Well, the best one that just got let go, the best one, when I was at UCLA, they always asked me, who did you fear about recruiting going up against if you were going to recruit against a kid? And, you know, I did the majority of the recruiting at UCLA. I was a recruiting coordinator. So, but we all pitched in, Eddie Schilling and Dwayne Broussard and Steve Alford, we all pitched in and sure. did our things. But the person that I knew I had a battle was with, because a lot of head coaches don't want to recruit, and that blows my mind, to tell you the truth. But mm-hmm. Sean Miller, you know, he got in trouble with the recruiting part, but Sean Miller worked. Sean Miller, this is what the story that I was told one time. Sean Miller would stay on the phone for like 20 minutes with the recruit, or maybe even 30 or 40 minutes. And at the end, he would say, did any other head coach call you today? And the kid would probably say no. And he said, oh, that's probably why they're probably calling somebody else and you're not priority.
Yeah.
I'm making you priority. That goes a long way. But Sean would definitely love to recruit. I think Andy Enfield loves to recruit.
At USC.
You know, Mike Krzyzewski, obviously, he had it rolling. You know, I went up against Duke a lot, only where we were only successful with Kevon Looney, and we got him out of Milwaukee. And but they do things a little different over there. I'm not saying they cheat or nothing, but they how they get things going, the brotherhood and all of that. And obviously, they you know, it's a blue blood. So a lot of kids want to go there anyway. And they play in the ACC, one of the best leagues that there is. So, but those guys are good, are very good recruiters. I'm trying to think of some more, but I didn't fear anybody when I recruited. Just when I saw Sean Miller in the door, I said, okay, I got to go a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Because as a head coach, you know, he had it rolling, you know, and because he worked at it, you know, Eddie Schilling, who he and I were at UCLA together, but Eddie was in Sean's wedding. And Eddie used to tell me, he said, Sean always used to say when he was assistant coach, when I become a head coach, I'm going to work just as hard in recruiting as I was assistant coach. Hmm. So that's the main one that stood out to me. But a lot of them don't like recruiting. And, you know, that's why you see a lot of changes.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years, there's coaching changes because, you know, there was an article a couple of days ago about the University of Georgia head football coach.
Yep.
And he spoke about, you're not going to outcoach talent. And that's very true. You know, when you get to Division I level, us coaches, we know our X's and O's. You know, you don't get there without not knowing the X, you know, how to coach a team. Now, the talent takes over.
Yep.
You know, and then somebody always used to tell me too, 80% of the games won in college basketball is better talent. Mm. Because the coaches can coach, you know, so then the talent takes over. But you also have, you know, you can have a lot of talent and not win because you can have a bad locker room.
Yeah.
Where kids aren't getting along or they're not happy or there's not enough basketballs to go around. That happened at Arizona State last year. They had so much talent, it wasn't enough basketballs. And the point guards were very selfish. You know, I love Remy Martin, but he's selfish.
Yeah.
You know, and Ferge was too, very talented kids. But with that group, they weren't going to be successful.
Yeah, that's good. As a recruit, when you think through your career, what are the attributes that have allowed you to be such a successful recruiting coordinator, a guy that could bring in talent?
Well, I think, you know, with my 20 years in background and my personality, I think people trust me. Mm. You know, I've never lied to them. I think that goes a long ways. I think my work ethic, I work extremely hard and keeping relationships going and making sure that that I communicate with them every day. Not just the recruit, but the AAU coach, the high school coach, the barber, the janitor, you know, whoever's around the kid. But I think my personality and I'm not going to lie to them. You know, I have great, I go by the Air Force core values, you know, service before self, excellence in all we do, and integrity. I live like that. Those are my three core values that I live by. And, you know, I learned that when I was 18 years old. That made a great, significant emotional event to go in the Air Force and learn those three core values that the Air Force still has. And and they're the best in the world at what they do. So that military sticks with me, and the core values stick with me. And I think parents see that, and they trust me with their kids, and they trust that what I'm telling them about the head coach, you know, it's all about the head coach. You know, I'm not going to get a kid without a head coach.
Right.
I'm not like, I didn't land Lonzo Ball. UCLA landed Lonzo Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because the head coach is the one telling them when they go to class, when they come home, when time they go to sleep, how much playing time they're going to get on the road, what time they got to be in bed. You know what I mean? So he's making all the calls, but I'm just there to facilitate all of it.
Yeah. Okay. So you're on the road recruiting. You're evaluating talent. Obviously, a majority of what you guys do, I think, is in the summertime when you're out and about. Let's say talent's pretty equal. Okay, the talent level's pretty equal. What are those things as you're recruiting that you're looking for? Or maybe I'll ask it this way. What are those things that when you see in a certain player, again, talent being equal, when you see this in a certain player, maybe a couple things in a certain player, your thought goes to this one's got a chance to be special. And maybe the flip side, when you don't see like some things in a guy, it's like, he's good. He's got talent, but I just don't know if he's going to be that elite type special guy. What are some of those attributes that you observe and look for those guys that are like, okay, this guy's got a chance to, because of his talent, just to be really, really good. He's got a chance to be elite.
Well, you always look as far as the athleticism and all that, all the physical attributes. But what I think you're asking is, I look for how do they impact their teammates? How do they impact the game? How do they impact their coach? Hmm. How do they impact their family at home? You know, all those attributes. When I go, like, if I know a kid, say at Aberdeen High School, I'm going to go find that janitor and I'm going to ask that janitor, how does he treat his classmates when no one's around? And I'm going to go talk to his teachers. How does he treat the teachers? You know, we need winners. We need, you know, college coaches, especially assistant coaches, are on usually 1-year deals or 2-year deals. And if you don't win, you get fired. So you go from making, you know, at UCLA making good money, and maybe not UCLA, but Vanderbilt making good money to zero. So you want to get a young man that's going to have those attributes to positively impact those areas I just talked about.
Yeah.
And the ability to defend, the ability to go dive on the ball. How does he handle adversity when he gets a bad call against him? How does he handle his teammates making mistakes?
Mm.
You know, what's his body language like? I'm looking at all of that. When I go to an AAU event, how soon do they get their sneakers on? And how excited are they? What do they look like in the layup line? How are they cool? Are they nonchalant? Do they think they've arrived?
Yeah.
You know, are they hungry? You know, are they humble kids? So many attribute goes into it. And one major thing I think a lot of assistant coaches miss a little bit, and they learn later on in life, will my head coach like him?
Yeah.
That's very important. Will my head coach like, there's a kid that went to USC, he's in the NBA now, he's with the Houston Rockets. He'd have choked Steve Alford. He'd have choked him. So I didn't recruit him. I stopped recruiting him, and I could have got him. Kevin Porter Jr. is his name.
Yep.
Those two wouldn't have mixed. And Andy Infield had him, and he didn't mix with Andy either. but he luckily got him out of there 1 year. But Kevin is, you know, I love Kevin, but Kevin wouldn't have fit in at UCLA.
Yeah,